5600 and online at WNSR.com. And now, here's Johnny.
And happy Monday, everyone. Reaction Monday. Johnny Ballpark Franks with you, along with Zach Williams. 615-844-5600. 844-5600. A lot to react to. And first and foremost, Zach, let me just say it's great to be back on the airways. Pure hell. That's the best way I would describe last week, especially Tuesday, Wednesday. And I just want to say thank you for, gosh, the hundreds and hundreds of prayers that were out there. Very much appreciated. You hear various folks that have tested positive with COVID-19, and, you know, some had no symptoms, some had mild symptoms. I had the worst of it, and there was a couple of days there very dicey for me where I actually had a hospital on standby just in case. But big thanks to all of you that reached out, and just glad to be back. Not 100%, but I am I'm efforting today there, Zach.
Well, we're all glad that you're back and starting to feel better. So it's just, you know, we got through it.
You know, I would have been good. You know, I know 2020 is a strange year. I would have been good if I did not have this experience. And, you know, you hear folks talk about it, and it's one thing to hear other folks describe what they've gone through. Words do not do it justice. And I'll just leave it at that. Wear your mask. Simple as that. Do everything you possibly can, never, ever, ever, to get this. That would be my best advice for you.
That's what we're doing, baby.
All right, let's see. Where do you want to start with? You know, so I'm watching what an interesting day, first of all, with college football on Saturday. Really enjoyed the Auburn-Ole Miss game. And, you know, I was listening last hour to the George Plaster Show and talking about how, you know, for whatever reason, you know, Gus Malzahn and Auburn, they just keep getting fortunate breaks because Mize showed me that the returner actually touched the ball as far as that would have given a touchdown to Ole Miss. I'm a little surprised that they did not stop and review that. I go back to with the fact that they were able to get the win against Arkansas mainly because there was no video evidence ever, you know, showing that an Arkansas player had actually recovered a ball there, which gave Auburn, because that was the case, they end up kicking a game-winning field goal a few weeks back. Auburn, very fortunate team that they don't have a couple of extra losses on their agenda right now.
I think there's a lot of SEC teams that can say that right now, too, with the way that some of the plays and games have gone, not only this week but just past weeks. There's been some really close ones, and you had to expect it from this division or this conference just because the amount of pressure and playing SEC every week is, you know, it's going to wear on some people, and it's starting to show. The cracks are starting to form.
The Alabama-Tennessee game, I don't know about you. I'm surprised that we don't have more fractured ankles, you know, with the way that game kicked off with Jalen Waddle returning the opening kickoff, and he gets written down as he's trying to go around the left side, and he gets his ankle rolled up on. I'm really surprised that we don't see more, you know, cases like that and more broken ankles out there. But what a sad way for Jalen Waddle to wrap up this campaign. You know, he's projected to be a first-round draft pick along with wide receiver Devontae Smith as well. But, you know, what a just an exciting player to watch as far as in college football, and for his it looks like his Alabama career, not unless he decides to come back, which I don't think will be the case. It's sad that it goes out that way. And you go back to, remember last year, Tua Tagovailoa had his ankle rolled up on, and that's when he had the surgery. But it's kind of similar situation when he gets tackled in the Tennessee game, and he had the high, you know, ankle sprain, which he had suffered before with the other leg. But I'm really surprised that we don't see more of that, of what happened to Jalen Waddle on Saturday. The other thing, of course, when you look at Alabama, now 14 straight wins that they have over Tennessee. The other part that, you know, they talked about it a little bit during the broadcast, but they didn't really hit home because it's the current longest streak right now, 18 straight games of scoring 35 or more points. It's the all-time record. You know, you think about how many years college football is being played now, 101 years, and 18 straight games now, Alabama with 35 or more points. It's the longest streak in college football history, and just another great performance from not only Mac Jones at quarterback, Najee Harris carrying the ball, and now Alabama, they'll have Mississippi State, Mike Leach and company coming into town, and you wonder what Mike Leach may have up his sleeve as far as for Alabama. We saw what happened back in week one with the 600-plus passing yards and the win against LSU. LSU with a very impressive win over the weekend against South Carolina. You know, Alabama, 32-point favorite against Mississippi State coming into town. Yesterday, obviously, the big premier game as far as the NFL, a battle of two unbeatens between Pittsburgh and the Tennessee Titans. And, of course, Pittsburgh jumped out to the big, huge lead, and they almost gave it up as the Titans had their opportunity to send the game in overtime. But another missed field goal there, this one costly, that could have sent the game into overtime. You know, your thoughts on how that game played out. You know, first of all, if you're just watching just for pure enjoyment, what an outstanding game we were treated to, where it was like the first part is all Pittsburgh, and then watching what the Titans were able to do there in the second half.
Well, you know, it's what we've all come to see now with this Titans team, right? This team is they've not really shown up early in these games and just dominated throughout. They've had a real flair for, I don't know if it's by choice or by accident, but they've had a real flair for trying to make it dramatic. And I put a tweet out like right at halftime that everybody, you know, just calm down. This team's been down before. They've came back and figured out ways to win. They've done it already this season. They've done it last season. And you know, just relax, you know, everybody just relax. And of course, then the Titans team that we've seen for these past 5 weeks, showed up, and it had been, you know, they clearly have it. And, you know, we could talk about the kicking and all that. And obviously Gostkowski is on the hot seat for missing a game winning kick and being 5 of 11 from inside 50 yards. Anybody should be able to talk about that. But, you know, the biggest problem for this Titans team glared its ugly head. And it was my worry, what we talked about on Sunday about the game. My biggest worry with that game was the secondary. It really didn't matter. And if you actually go and look at the spread chart for all the completed passes for Big Ben, when you go and look at like Pro Football Focus or anything like that, right and left, it's just right and left of the field. He was hitting mid-range about on the right side, mid-range on the left side. All of his passes were right. That's where all of them were completed. And that's obvious that they were targeting every cornerback. I mean, the cornerbacks, Jonathan Joseph is, I said it when he came in, and I'm going to continue to say it now. He was clearly brought in to bring in Clowney. He is not a talent where you can just trust him out there by himself. Malcolm Butler still is also not that guy that he's never should be on an island by himself. I don't care what the two interceptions have covered up or anything like that. That secondary is hurt. And then Ty Smith is just, that's just, he's always been that kind of player. You're not looking for Ty Smith to come in and be your lockdown. And a lot of people are saying, oh man, I can't wait for Adoree Jackson to be back, and almost kind of mocking the idea that Adoree Jackson is not going to help the Tennessee Titans. I think Adoree Jackson is a good player, great player. We all know that. He's been very successful at the position at his young age, but he does not fix this secondary for the Tennessee Titans.
I disagree. I totally disagree, because Adoree Jackson, remember, he was one of the top 10 rated cornerbacks in the NFL last year. Grade-wise, he was like number 7 of all cornerbacks in the NFL. That mm-hmm. is, you remember, now because he's not in there, you have other folks having to play roles that are one spot up than they normally would be. And so Ty Smith yesterday, I mean, you can't, on that one touchdown completion that Ben Roethlisberger had that Ty Smith was defending on, I mean, you could not have thrown that ball. You couldn't have placed that ball in a better position. Ty Smith was in perfect position defending on that play, and somehow Ben Roethlisberger finds a way to, you know, thread the needle. We always hear that expression. And but, you know, to me, it's like you can't ask for better coverage than Ty Smith, what he was able to do on that play. you know, a little luck. You know, you get a little luck at times because that ball should have been knocked down, for example.
Well,
I think Adoree Jackson, when you think about the Titans secondary and you want to improve that secondary, well, two things have to happen. The Titans have to develop a better pass rush than they have. And if you don't get that, then you're going to make your secondary look a lot worse than it really is.
Well, look, Adoree Jackson's obviously a better player than everybody out there. But when you're talking about Adoree Jackson on the right side of the field, they're going to throw on the left side of the field because whoever's on that side is going to be able to get beat. And if you move Adoree to the left side, they're going to throw on the right side. That's my idea. They need a second guy besides Adoree to really come in and make a difference on this team. They don't have that. You could say much as you want about Malcolm Butler, but he is not the guy. His interceptions this year have came from basically just terrible throws that he was in bad coverage spots and happened to just be a terrible throw right to him.
And Christian Fulton, is he going to be there? We don't know just how good he's going to be.
And plus he's hurt, now that's another part of this. If all the trade talk and everything, it has to be, if the Titans were in any kind of situation to look for somebody to trade to or pick up or bring on, it has to be in the secondary. Because it's been a pitiful. I mean, you talk about that game. Once again, Gostkowski should have hit the field goal to go into overtime, but the secondary should have done a whole lot more than what they were doing. It was terrible.
By the way, watching the Patriots yesterday against San Francisco, one of the late games, here's the thing. The Patriots, by the way, they were actually a 3-point favorite yesterday at home against San Francisco. They get destroyed. It's their first
all on the ground too, by the way, because they had
three game losing streak, the Patriots, since 2002. That was a year they did not make it to the Super Bowl. Remember, they won and won in 2001 and then in 3 and 4, but that 2002 season they end up losing 4 straight, and they finished the season 9-7, but they were on the outside looking in as far as the playoffs. But do you feel a little sorry for the Patriots? And what about Cam Newton? I mean, remember how Cam Newton looked, so good early in the season? I don't know what happened to him, but it's almost like the lights have gone off.
Do I feel bad for the Patriots? Absolutely not. you would trade the recent success of the Tennessee Titans for the recent, Super Bowl championships that the Patriots have had. So, teams are going to get cyclical at some point and, go away, and that's just what's going to happen for them this season. But what's crazy about that game is that they're set just the opposite of the Titans. Their secondary defense was great. They held 200 some odd yards and 2 interceptions for Garoppolo. It wasn't right. Like they just did it on. They couldn't stop Jeff Wilson for anything. He was running anywhere he wanted. The only person that actually could stop Jeff Wilson was himself because he got injured. Ended up coming out of that game, but. Yeah, the Patriots are in a real pickle of a situation. I think it's not the worst thing that could happen. Because they need to get some younger guys in there. They're obviously not going to get the first pick for the draft, and they're going to miss out on Trevor Lawrence. But, maybe a trade comes up and they try to move up. I wouldn't be surprised, though, because their future's not Cam Newton. But Cam Newton, I think, is going to start coming into his own. That's the other side of this. I think he'll eventually start figuring out this offense like we saw earlier in the season and start working with these guys. It's still new, and there's still a lot of football left. And the good news for him and the Patriots, everybody in that division right now is vulnerable. Even the Bills, with what we've seen so far, they're vulnerable. So the division's still open. The division's still open for them.
Hey, by the way, how bizarre was it that we saw this on Saturday with the Penn State-Indiana game where, if you're Penn State, don't score, you're going to win the game, right? So instead, you see Penn State score, only chance for Indiana to actually win that ball game, and they found a way to get it done. And then we see the exact same thing happen with the Atlanta Falcons. Todd Gurley just stopped at the half-yard line, and they kick a little chip shot field goal, and it would have been a win for Atlanta yesterday over Detroit. And it's strange that we see something that happened on Saturday night, and nobody learned from it, and especially Todd Gurley and the Falcons in that situation that cost the Falcons yet another game.
He tried, though. he tried to not score, which is a crazy phrase that we have to actually say. He legitimately tried to stop his body and just caught a motion that he couldn't get away from and was even arguing that, saying, no, I didn't score.
Oh, yeah. But And then you had the one player from Detroit is like pointing down, like he's down. It's like, no, you want him to score.
Well, you had that. Then you had another Detroit Lions player holding his hands up saying touchdown, like he's celebrating the touch. There's a photo out there with him on the ground and then three Lions around him holding their hands up, like, yeah, he scored.
I mean, because here's Penn State; they're up 21-20, and so they score a touchdown with just under 2 minutes to go. So if he had stopped at the half yard line or whatever, you're going to be able to put the game away. Instead, he scores. They're up by 8. Indiana ties the game, and then with a 2-point conversion, they force the overtime. And boy, I don't know about you, I think that the 2-point conversion was good. I wouldn't have been able to overturn that on Michael Penix's run there for the 2-point conversion that gave Indiana the win. You know, it was so bang-bang, and they ruled on the field that it was good. There's no way you're going to overrule that.
No, I think it was it's like baseball, right? Tie goes to the runner, that kind of thing. It was so close, and so you couldn't change it. And honestly, I think it was good. I think
I thought it was good, too. You know, I know they wanted, like, oh, wait, no, they should have overruled that, and they should have said that it was no good, and it was in. I thought he did. I didn't see his knee down, and I see the ball hit the pylon. I see that's a good one. There's no way. And in fact, I wonder if there was enough evidence there, if they had said it was no good, if they would overruled it and said it was good with the replay.
Yeah, I think it was a clean touchdown and one of the best stretches we'll ever see in college or professional football. But yeah, his knees were up in the air, his body was sideways. He might have hit one blade of grass with white paint on it, but that counts on the rules. So it was a tremendous effort play that's going to live in infamy now. Did you see the photos though, that the memes that were going around of like the Michelangelo photo of the Sistine Chapel? He's outstretching the ball trying to touch God's finger. That's a good one.
Well, I mean, look at the total yards, by the way. Total yards, Penn State had just under 500 yards of offense, 488. Indiana only had 211. And, you know, in the end, it doesn't matter. They get the W. And this was a Penn State team that last year was making a decent run, but all, you know, indications they were looking at 2020 as the year for this team to make a run for the national championship. And now, you know, you start the year 0-1, you get Ohio State this week, so all of those hopes and aspirations could be over with by week 2 for the Penn State Nittany Lions.
James Franklin's going to come back to Vandy and fix it all up.
Is that what's going to happen?
Oh, gosh.
By the way, Vanderbilt finally gets to play coming up Saturday, so they've been off. This will be 3 weeks in between games, but they get Ole Miss coming up on Saturday, and it's an Ole Miss team that, you know, you know, it's interesting because this team has been so aggressive, especially on offense, and they got so conservative there in that fourth quarter against Auburn, still trying to figure out what they were thinking there. It was one of these games that had every opportunity to win it and give credit, you know, for whatever reason, Gus Malzahn and the Auburn Tigers just got that magic working for them so far this year.
Got to find a way. Good teams win. They find ways to win.
All right, if you'd like to be a part of the show, 615-844-5600, 844-5600. A little bit later this hour, Ryan Callahan joins us from Knoxville with GoVols247.com. Also, just after 5, Alan Bell with CBS Sportsline, sportsline.com. And then at 5:35, Brett Hudson, the Alabama beat writer with the Tuscaloosa News and Tide Sports. All that coming up between now and 6, right here on Nashville Sports Radio.
Good afternoon. We're looking live at this crash involving some injuries here on Briley Parkway. It's going to be going westbound. Briley Parkway there at I-24. Again, a wreck with injuries. We're looking at it live here involving multiple vehicles on Briley Parkway here at I-24 north of the city. It's also an accident being cleared there in the 2300 block of Jackson's Down Boulevard that's over in Donaldson. Check out the all-new Andre Chicken Sandwich now available at Princess Hot Chicken, 5814 Nolensville Pie. I'm Commander Chuck. You're on time traffic.
The Klein Preston Law Group in Nashville, a proud supporter of the Atlanta Braves and Southeastern Conference, has over 2 decades of experience in litigation and transactional practice. Their practice focuses primarily on business law, including business litigation, business structure, and international law. The Klein Preston Law Group has represented clients from state and federal courts throughout the state of Tennessee to the United States Supreme Court. For more information, go to their website, Klein with a K, PrestonLaw.com.
Hey, Tennessee. Sports betting is almost here, and FanDuel Sportsbook is giving you an exclusive offer to get started. Right now, FanDuel Sportsbook is giving users $50 in free bets just for signing up. You heard that right. They're giving you $50 in free site credit. Register and verify early. No deposit required. FanDuel is America's number one sports betting site for a reason. They've got odds on all the biggest sports and a simple, intuitive app that makes it easy to find the bet you're looking for and then lock it in. And unlike other sports books, once you win, FanDuel gets you your cash in as little as 24 hours. Why? Because it's the right thing to do. But right now, the right thing for you to do is download the FanDuel Sportsbook app and check out their fantastic app for yourself. Just be sure to sign up and register using promo code FRANK so they know we sent you. When you verify your account, you'll receive $50 in site credit when FanDuel Sportsbook is live. That's promo code FRANKS to get $50 in site credit when FanDuel Sportsbook is live.
Must be 21 or older and present in Tennessee. Site credit is non-withdrawable and expires 7 days after receipt. Terms apply. See sportsbook.fanduel.com for details. For problem gambling support, call 1-800-889-9789.
It's just a few cocktails at happy hour.
There aren't any cops around.
After every game, we always have a few. It's no big deal.
It was just a few drinks. I'm good.
Hey, I can hold my liquor.
I drink and drive all the time.
If you put away some drinks, put away your keys. Fans don't let fans drive drunk. Brought to you by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office.
Your exclusive Nashville Sports Radio WNSR Skyscan forecast. For this afternoon, cloudy sky, high 61, light north winds. Fog develops after midnight tonight with a mostly cloudy low down to 51. For tomorrow, Tuesday, remaining dry yet mostly cloudy, afternoon high 66. Utilizing the resources of the Weatherbug Network on Nashville Sports Radio, I'm WNSR's TJ Matthews.
Sports Radio WNSR.
Call the Johnny Ballpark Frank Show now, 615-844-5600.
Welcome back, Johnny Ballpark Frank's with you, along with Zach Williams, 615-844-5600. That's 844-5600. Clay in Nashville, welcome to the show.
Johnny, first of all, speedy recovery.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Obviously, you were pretty sick.
Yeah, I mean, I had 104 temperature twice. I mean, I had fever surges. That was the weirdest part, the fever surges that lasted for about 7 days and got a little dicey there when it would hit 104. And so glad all that is hopefully behind me now, knocking on wood.
Johnny, I'm saying this a little bit tongue-in-cheek from your comment about Auburn. I guess you heard my call with George.
Right.
So I'm not going to be redundant, but I'm just going to say this. It appears SEC officials are trying to save Gus Malzahn's job.
Well, I go back to the Arkansas game, and the only reason why Auburn was allowed to kick that game-winning field goal is because they did not have any footage at all where an Arkansas player picked up the ball. If they had had that, then Auburn, the game would have been over. So, you know, that's one of those things where, you know, you always hear about, you know, play till the whistle blows and all that. And if you don't know for sure, if you're on defense in that situation, pick up the ball. And that's the only reason why Auburn was even allowed to kick that game winning field goal. It had nothing to do with Auburn or Gus Malzahn getting breaks. There was just no video evidence showing an Arkansas player recovering the football.
Well, as a Vanderbilt fan, you know, I've certainly seen my share of bad calls in the SEC over the last 50 years. But I'm not going to, you know, harbor this too hard, Johnny, but I just think the SEC officiating is below par. Would you agree with that?
No. Look, we're talking about, it's not an easy thing to be able to be an official, especially for I will throw it out there, especially the Power Five conferences, mainly because, you know, you think about the athletes, bigger, stronger, faster. And, you know, I have had a lot of conversations over the years, especially now with retired Steve Shaw with the SEC office, and just the work that they put in as far as physically being in a position to be able to do the job, you know, making sure they're in shape and everything else. And look, it's not easy, and But, you know, the call, like, on Saturday, the fact that they didn't stop and review, they said they did. Knowing how important that play was, that was a touchdown if they rule in favor that that ball hit the pinky of the Auburn returner, because the ball was recovered in the end zone. That was a touchdown for Ole Miss. And knowing the importance of that particular play at that juncture of the game, I'm shocked that they didn't take more time to look at it.
Quickly on to a couple things about pro football, Johnny. You know, I've announced on this show and other shows on this channel that I'm a passionate Dallas Cowboys fan. And I'll repeat, I love the team. I hate the owner. Let's just say I think that the Botox man has gone senile. So just stick a fork in the Cowboys.
Appreciate your phone call there.
Thanks.
You know, Zach, we think about injuries to individuals and how much you, when you have certain injuries, you kind of rip the heart and soul out of a team. And that's what we had heard constantly about Dak Prescott. And, you know, you could have the debate all you want, whether or not he deserved $40 million a year. But, you know, he had that locker room. You know, that locker room believed in him as a player, as a leader. And without him now, boy, you're just seeing a Cowboys team that has totally gone south.
Yeah, you know, it was talked about, too. I forget who it was that said it. It was some former player. But they were talking about after the hit on Andy Dalton, there was not one Cowboys player that was in the face of Bolstick at all after that hit, trying to defend their quarterback or anything. I mean, nobody did anything. He was almost alone, just sitting there after the hit, thriving in pain. And there was one, like, meandering Cowboy player, like, wanting to help. And it doesn't look good there. And it's really sad, too, because you saw the historic pace that Dak Prescott was on. And not only for, you know, Dak Prescott, but the Cowboys, what he was doing for the Cowboys and their team. And they should put a contract out there right now for Dak Prescott to be the future, because clearly the team is nothing without him. And this even goes to Zeke, who is one of the best running backs in the league when Dak Prescott's on the field, because when he's not, he is very subpar of a running back and almost doesn't even look like he wants to be out there.
And, you know, the strange part about that, and I understand that this team, record-wise, now with that loss, they're 2-5, and they looked awful against Washington. But the fact of the matter is, they're only a half game out of first place.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the Eagles in first place with a 2-4-1 record. You've got Washington and Dallas tied for second at 2-5, three games under 500. And so they're very much, you know, it's anybody's race, for that matter. And but at the same time, you wonder, you know, when Dak Prescott went down, you know, what it did to that, the mental part of it for the Dallas Cowboys. And so I don't think it has anything to do with, you know, whether or not they love Andy Dalton or not. I just think that this team is no longer, quote unquote, a team. I just think you've got just a bunch of individuals now instead of rallying as a team. And the thing is, the potential's right. I mean, look, somebody can win it. I mean, whether it's Dallas or what, one of those teams are going to win it. Dallas is very much right there in the thick of it, because it's not like the Eagles or Washington scares you. And so that's the part that I'm a little surprised about, that you can't use something like that as a rallying cry.
I think I have two possible fixes here for the Cowboys, and it all clearly hangs on their quarterback. Their defense is a train wreck, but on their quarterback side of things, one, I would make a trade or something to try to go get Ryan Fitzpatrick, a guy that they know can have success, a guy who's not afraid to throw the ball, who's mobile enough to get away. He's in a way, he's like the Dak Prescott way of playing football. He's got that same kind of mentality.
They should, because the Dolphins now are moving on.
Exactly.
And it's going to be now Tua Tagovailoa's show. And so I'm totally on the same page right there. I think Ryan Fitzpatrick would be a perfect, you know, example of a quarterback that, who knows, that could spark this Dallas Cowboys team.
And he fills that gap, too, you know, until Dak comes back. You can bridge him as a solid starter. The other side of this is the second way that they could possibly fix it, and it's already been talked about a little bit. I don't know if there's any rumors or anything that are true to it, but Colin Kaepernick is still out there, and it is a whole other bag of issues that you're going to bring him in, and also to Jerryland as well in this situation. But that you need a guy, this Cowboys team, like you said, they're only a half game out. They need a guy to come in and play well now. With that amount of wide receivers that and talent that they have all around that ball, they just need somebody that they could all look at and have that's had success and also can be what they need for their offense, which Colin Kaepernick and his play style also lends itself to where the Cowboys are right now with just enough mobility to get away, can throw the ball down the field, not going to be afraid to throw the ball down the field. But that's another name that's out there.
Yeah, but with Colin Kaepernick right now, though, if you're really interested in bringing him on board, he's somebody that needs to be a part of the offseason for the complete offseason.
Right.
Offseason, training camp, preseason games. He has not played in 4 years. You can't expect him to come in and make a difference not being out on that football field for 4 years.
It's Fitzpatrick is definitely the first choice you want to go for.
But he's, as I always like to say about Ryan Fitzpatrick, he will build up hope inside of you and then rip it out. And I've seen it time and time again. I saw it with the Jets. Does he give you a better option and better opportunity to win? Yeah.
A sixth round pick for Fitzpatrick right now for this Cowboys team that is, like you said, a half game out. That's not a bad loss to get a guy in. I think the Dolphins would take that trade.
I mean, I look at that. I look at what the Patriots are facing now. Cam Newton, certainly not the answer anymore. Jarrett Stidham looked awful. It's interesting when you get teams like the Patriots that have no quarterback per se. But the Cowboys, that division can be won by the Cowboys, even despite being three games under 500. I go back. First place is on the line coming up this weekend for the Cowboys. And so why not, try to pull some magic there and do something? Because nobody's running away with that division as far as the NFC East is concerned.
No. And you need a guy to come in and be the guy right away. So, yeah, there's options out there. And you said magic could be a little Fitz magic out there.
That's where I was going with that. So I was seeing if you dialed into that.
Real quick, I know we're going to head to a break here soon, but last night, that game against the Cardinals and Seahawks, first off, was probably the best Sunday night football game we've seen in a long time. But I had nightmares last night.
Why is that?
DK Metcalf chasing me down, and I was never going to get away. I mean, did you see how far and how fast that guy ran? Every NFL team, the way they look at Derrick Henry, I think they're going to start looking at DK Metcalf because they let every team pass up on DK Metcalf and the athleticism that he has to not only chase down an NFL cornerback to do it and not even look like he was ever not going to catch him. It was
how did Ole Miss not win more games knowing they had Metcalf and AJ Brown?
Just verticals just every time and just throw it. It's insane.
Arizona, by the way, with that win, 5-2. Every team, by the way, in the NFC West above 500. San Francisco in the basement at 4-3, but you've got Seattle 5-1, Arizona now 5-2. The Rams looking for their fifth win tonight as they take on the Bears, but they're 4-2, looking to go 5-2 with a win. But every team in the NFC West above 500 right now.
Can I tell you why?
Oh, go ahead.
They're all playing the NFC East. That's why you've had the Cardinals play the Cowboys and the Reds, the Washington football team. You've had the Rams play. I mean, they're just playing the NFC East constantly. So,
and by the way, so far there've only been three division games as far as involving the NFC West.
Yep.
The Arizona Cardinals out, by the way, 2-0 inside the division. San Francisco 1-1. And Seattle and the Rams are both 0-1 inside the division.
Seattle and the Titans are like the exact same team right now in the way that everything's going. They have terrible defense, not able to stop anything, but they have this high-powered offense. It's crazy to see the parallels between those two programs right now.
All right, coming up on the other side, a chance to talk a little Tennessee Vols, SEC, and more. Ryan Callahan joins us with Go Vols 24/7. Hey, Tennessee, sports betting almost here, and FanDuel Sportsbook is giving you an exclusive offer to get started. Right now, FanDuel Sportsbook giving users $50 in free bets just for signing up. You heard that right. They're giving you $50 in free site credit to register and verify early. No deposit required. FanDuel, America's number one sports betting site for a reason. They've got odds in all the biggest sports and a simple, intuitive app that makes it easy to find the bet you're looking for and then lock it in. And unlike other sports books, once you win, FanDuel gets you your cash in as little as 24 hours. Why? Because it's the right thing to do. But right now, the right thing for you to do is download the FanDuel Sportsbook app and check out their fantastic app for yourself. Just be sure to sign up and register using the promo code FRANKS so they know that I sent you. That's right, use the promo code FRANKS. And when you verify your account, you'll receive $50 in site credit when FanDuel Sportsbook is live. That's promo code FRANKS to get $50 in site credit when FanDuel Sportsbook is live. Now, when I first looked at the app, I was surprised how easy it really is to use. You're going to discover the exact same thing. And here's a reminder, must be 21 or older and present in Tennessee. Site credit is non-withdrawable and expires 7 days after receipt. Terms apply. See sportsbook.fanduel.com for details. For problem gambling support, call 800-889-9789.
Good afternoon. Traffic's really slow go here because of this crash with injuries on Briley Pike.
That's 800-648-9175.
What in the hell's an internet?
Nashville Sports Radio has been covering Music City for over 20 years. From your radio dial to the App Store, there's no reason you should be without Nashville Sports Radio. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Nash Sports Radio. We would have a TikTok account, but we're old and we don't know what that is. From live games to live streaming, at Nash Sports Radio has you covered. Download the Nashville Sports app to your phone now. Or the puppy gets it.
Sports Radio WNSR.
Listen to the Johnny Ballpark Frank Show online live at WNSR.com.
Welcome back, Johnny Ballpark Frank's with you. Don't forget, coming up just after 5, Alan Bell with CBS Sportsline, sportsline.com, as we look at Monday Night Football, other action as far as yesterday in the NFL, and more. But right now, a chance to talk a little Tennessee Vols college football with our good buddy Ryan Callahan over in Knoxville with GoVols247.com. Ryan, thank you again, as always. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, Johnny. Thanks for having me.
All right, so after the smoke cleared on Saturday afternoon, 14 straight losses now for the Tennessee Vols to Alabama. Overall, when you look at what transpired over those 3 hours on Saturday afternoon, what's your general assessment of Tennessee and the effort that they gave and the, you know, despite the 48-17 loss, but something maybe positive to take away from Saturday?
Yeah, so I think you touched on it there. The word that comes to mind for me is effort, because I think that the outcome is about what you expected. You know, it's Alabama. They've got a great offense. They're the number two team in the country. And Tennessee, quite frankly, just isn't at that level yet. They're not ready to really challenge Alabama. Even though they were in the game with them in the fourth quarter last year, that was, to me, a weird game where, you know, Tua Tagovailoa is out because of an injury. I don't think you could expect a repeat of that performance with Alabama rolling the way it's been offensively. So the outcome about what you expected, but to me, kind of a wasted opportunity and maybe not the effort you expected to see from Tennessee for four quarters, from the coaching staff on down, because to me, it felt like Tennessee just sort of, you know, lied down and took it in that game. Once Alabama took a sizable lead, I didn't see enough fight from Tennessee. It seemed like they just sort of accepted the outcome. And it seemed like they wasted some opportunities to get some young guys some experience. They weren't as aggressive as I would have thought Tennessee might be. I thought you might see, you know, an onside kick from them after a touchdown. You know, they had a key opportunity, I thought, at 21-10 after scoring a touchdown to maybe try an onside kick there or do something to be aggressive and try to get back in the game there and make it interesting. Didn't see that from them. And then I thought in the second half, just, you know, once the game sort of got away from them, I thought they wasted some opportunities to get some young guys out there when the game was maybe when there weren't just backups on both sides, when it wasn't completely garbage time. You had a chance to maybe play some young guys, get them some experience, and see what you have in some positions with some of your youth going into a really critical second half of the season now. So I thought just kind of a lackluster effort at times from Tennessee, and I didn't see enough aggression and enough fight from Tennessee, frankly, and that's maybe more concerning to me than just the score. Looking at it from the standpoint of what Tennessee needs to do over the second half of the season, I thought they could have done some other things to put up a better fight and to get themselves ready for the stretch run. And I don't think they got all that much accomplished, but they did play better on the offensive line, hit some deep balls to Jalin Hyatt. So you got some positives to work on and things that will really come into play in the second half, but just could have gotten more out of that game, I thought, if they had approached it differently and maybe, you know, responded better when Alabama got up by double digits.
And look, it's one of these things, too, and, you know, because one of the conversations about Alabama early on over the first 3 weeks was the fact that, you know, what's wrong with Alabama's defense? I mean, I go back to the 63-48 win over Ole Miss, and I go back that in 2020, with regards to a lot of these teams, the fact that no spring drills, I really felt like the defense behind the offenses early on. But we go back to that second half last week for Alabama against Georgia, where they shut Georgia down in the second half. Georgia doesn't even score a single point. And now we look at what Alabama was able to do on Saturday against Tennessee. It wasn't that Tennessee wasn't executing. I think the Alabama defense is finally getting up to, you know, quote-unquote game speed, and the defense is finally catching up with, you know, and how good we thought that the defense was going to be for this Alabama team.
That may be. I think we'll find out more about that over the second half of the season for Alabama, because I think they clearly do have the talent on that side of the ball to be better. But I also don't know that this will be an Alabama defense that's kind of like maybe what we're used to seeing 5, 6, 7 years ago when Alabama's defense really, really dominated games. I don't know that they'll be quite at that level, but I do think they are starting to play better. And if you're an Alabama fan, that's certainly got to make you feel better going into some you know, more important games, obviously, toward the end of the regular season and getting into possible postseason play. But I do think, you know, Tennessee, frankly, just wasn't doing enough to really threaten Alabama in that game. You know, they took some shots down the field, and they hit a few. And frankly, I think we can say now that that's got to be one of the strengths of Tennessee's offense. You know, Jared Garantano has made some of those plays to Josh Palmer down the sideline and out to Jalin Hyatt, that I think, A, Hyatt needs to play more. I think he's shown that his speed can be a problem for opposing teams, even if he struggles to get off press coverage at times. You've got to let him learn and find a way to get through it, because he's shown he can be a difference maker out there. And Josh Palmer has been a pretty consistent playmaker. So, you know, it's not with Marquez Callaway and Juwan Jennings this year, and yet we're still seeing Garantano throw a nice deep ball down the sideline and give his guys a chance to make a play. So I think you maybe got to do that a little bit more. Tennessee's run game, though, wasn't very good in this game. You know, how much of that was Alabama? How much was that Tennessee's offensive line not getting enough of a push? You know, the numbers were just okay there. But Tennessee's offensive line didn't give up a sack in this game. I think that's a real positive to build on, because I don't – several times I let Garantano push – you know, went back in the pocket and had plenty of time to throw. And that's something he hasn't had for a lot of the year. So maybe it was just the way Alabama approached things defensively and sat back in coverage. But I thought Tennessee protected it well, and that's something they can build on. And, you know, it's an Alabama defense that, you know, maybe gave them some opportunities to score more. But they just, you know, didn't push the issue, didn't make a whole lot happen aside from those few deep balls they hit to score those touchdowns that we saw Saturday.
Where's the faith in Jeremy Pruitt being the answer to for, you know, this Tennessee program to recapture what that tradition means?
I think it's starting to crack a little bit for a lot of fans. I think there's definitely some concern now, because you know, a lot of people know the stats on all these things. You know, what's the stat that has been out there for years, that you know, Philip Fulmer was the last SEC head coach maybe to win an SEC title that won his first after his second year. You know, so often these days you find out whether a head coach, you know, has it by year two or certainly by year three in a lot of cases. So I think fans have started to believe, and I think, you know, Butch Jones is maybe, you know, depending on how you look at it, can be an example or not an example of that, where Tennessee was still on the way up in year three under Butch Jones, but they also had some missed opportunities that year against Florida, against Oklahoma, where they probably could have won the SEC East if they had taken care of business, but they had some glaring, strange decisions by Butch Jones in some cases, and just some not being aggressive enough, things like that. I think some fans believe a lot of fans probably, that you can kind of make up your mind about a head coach these days by the end of year three, that you can tell a lot by the end of year three, no matter how big of a rebuild it is. So I think there are some people that feel that way that now look at his resume and say, you lost to Georgia State last year, you lost to BYU. Sure, you climbed out of it, but there were a lot of SEC teams on the schedule that were not very good that you just sort of beat at the end of the season and got caught fire against a fairly favorable schedule. And then this year you now had a 27-point loss to Kentucky that a lot of people would argue should not happen under any circumstances for Tennessee, and it hadn't happened by that big of a margin since 1935. So when you look at that, you know, firing a defensive line coach midseason, I think there are some things that fans look at now that are concerning to them. And you see an offense that's kind of spinning its wheels. You know, even though Jarrett Garantano settled things down Saturday and played better, didn't throw an interception, you know, what's that side of the ball doing right now that's generating a lot of excitement? I don't see a lot of reason for fans to be thrilled about where that side of the ball is headed. And now there's some legitimate concern that you go to Arkansas after the open date this week, and that's a game you easily could lose because Arkansas is playing better. So you got to get some things working better than they are right now if Tennessee's going to have a better second half. And I think the second half will tell the tale, but I think fans are starting to worry a little bit.
Over the weekend, Alabama, with a commitment, the number one cornerback in all the land, JaQuincy McKinstry. Alabama now, remember how we were talking about what's wrong with Alabama recruiting for 2021 back in April, where they were around the 50 mark of 130 teams? The number one recruiting class now, five-stars as part of this recruiting class. 17 of their 22 commitments are either 4 stars or 5 stars with this latest commitment.
Yeah, and you know, we kind of said this at the time. I don't think, you know, when teams like Tennessee were racking up commitments this spring, early in the dead period, you know, and you saw Alabama lower in the rankings and people kind of wondering, well, where's Alabama? What's going on with them? I don't think they were panicking, and I don't think they've panicked at any point because they've always been in the mix for some guys like McKinstry. Like some of the other players they've landed in recent months. And I think they've still felt good about their chances of landing those guys. And they're showing now they were right not to worry at that time. There are 22 commitments and they've gone past Ohio State, obviously, which has had a tremendous class for months. And they're now 6 points ahead of them in the 24/7 Sports composite team ranking. So when you see what Alabama's doing, what they've done already and what they still could add to this class, they're clearly rolling in recruiting, and that's not something we should be surprised by at this point from a Nick Saban staff. But they've obviously responded pretty well to Georgia challenging them more over the past 3 years. You know, Clemson's won more of those battles in recent years. They've got more competition, but they're showing right now they're still a team you don't want to go head to head with very often because they're often going to win one of those battles.
Before we let you go, remind everybody again what they can expect when they go to govols247.com.
Yeah, tons of coverage this week. Looking at Tennessee at the halfway point of the season and this week's open date. Recruiting, got some key decisions coming up for some Tennessee targets. Looking at that and much more during the open date and plenty to keep track of as we look ahead to, you know, hopefully basketball season. Any news there as well? And you can track it all. GoVols247.com and sign up right now for 50% off an annual subscription if you sign up today.
Ryan, thank you so much. Have a great week. Look forward to talking to you again soon.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot, Johnny.
Thank you. That's Ryan Callahan joining us from Knoxville. Coming up, we'll wrap up hour number one. You're listening to Nashville Sports Radio.
Well, good afternoon. It's still limping along here on this earlier crash westbound Briley Parkway here at I-24. We're still looking at it. They've managed to move all the damaged vehicles to the side. It's still slow through here. Briley Parkway westbound there at I-24. 24 eastbound at Shelby, another accident. They're trying to move quickly. It's been crazy there today for some reason. Celebrate autumn at Obergatlinburg during Oktoberfest. Now through November 1st, visit Obergatlinburg.com. I'm Commander Chuck, your on-time traffic.
Final lap with Kerry Murphy is on.
Up next this weekend is race number 2 in the round of 8 from Texas Motor Speedway. This place is big, it's bad, it's fast, and it's just absolutely massive with their HDTV there on the backstretch as well. We are looking at a 1.5 mile oval, banking up to 24 degrees. The front stretch is 2,250 feet, backstretch 1,330. All right, so Cup Series looks like this. 334 laps, 501 miles. Stages are 105 laps each, and then the balance for that third stage. Kevin Harvick is your pole sitter after NASCAR's weird way of determining that. And here's the top 10 starting positions. Joey Logano, Brad Keselowski, Chase Elliott, Alex Bowman, Martin Truex Jr., Denny Hamlin, Kurt Busch, Kyle Busch, and Ryan Blaney. Last year's winner was Kevin Harvick. The spring winner this year, Austin Dillon. Check out all the Cup Series action Sunday, 3:30 p.m. Eastern on NBCSN. He's locked into the Final Four at Phoenix, so Chase Briscoe heads into this weekend at Texas without a care in the world.
It allows us to, for sure, focus on that car solely, just knowing that we're for sure going to be there. And then even from just a preparation standpoint, I was just at the Ford Performance Center yesterday and, you know, running laps in the simulator at Phoenix already, trying to get prepared, where normally we wouldn't be doing that, you know, 3 weeks out. And, you know, even reaching out to Harvick yesterday about coming to the simulator to help me just get around there a little bit better.
Final lap. And now a game of Commercial Chicken, brought to you by Progressive, where we see how long Flo can go without talking about insurance. Ready? Go.
So, have you noticed how everyone's grammar is completely awful now? Like, you know, the texting and the LOLs. Whatever happened to punctuation? I mean, drivers who switch to Progressive could save big!
Okay, you win. We can't help but save customers money. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates.
Now there's a natural way to take charge of your blood pressure. Introducing new Garlic Healthy Blood Pressure Formula from the makers of the nation's best-selling garlic supplement. New Garlic helps maintain healthy blood pressure levels with clinically supported levels of garlic, plus a custom blend of vitamins and minerals. And it's odor-free. Take charge of your blood pressure with new Garlic Healthy Blood Pressure Formula. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. The term natural references only the garlic in the product. Use as directed.
Hey, Nashville, this is Crazy Charlie Saunier, executive producer of WNSR, and I'm here reminding you that Bongo Job at the Omni Nashville Hotel is the best place to start your day in the Music City. Their new limited summer hours and menu is simply the best in town. From burritos to smoothies, plus the new biscuit sandwiches and croissants, Bongo Java has you covered. Located at the Omni Nashville Hotel, 5th Avenue downtown. They're open from 7 to 11 a.m. And make sure you tell them Crazy Charlie sent you.
Listen live online to the Johnny Ballpark Frank Show at WNSR.com.
And welcome back. Johnny Ballpark Franks with you along with Zach Williams. With this friendly reminder, whether it's tonight watching Monday Night Football, later in the week, if you're planning on drinking with your friends, family, whatever the case may be, don't get behind the wheel. Drunk driving is the ultimate form of unsportsmanlike conduct, and the Tennessee Highway Safety Office reminds you that fans don't let fans drive drunk. Hour number one in the books, hour number two coming up. Don't forget, at 5:05, Alan Bell with CBS Sportsline, sportsline.com, as we look back at yesterday's action in the NFL, plus Monday Night Football as well. And coming up around 5:35, Brett Hudson joins us. He's out of Tuscaloosa. He's the Alabama beat writer for the Tuscaloosa News and TideSports.com. That's all coming up in hour number two right here on Nashville Sports Radio.